AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. An attorney for the Virginia teacher shot by her student earlier this month says school administrators ignored warnings about the six-year-old. Now the superintendent has been fired. CBS's Matt Piper.
Newport News Virginia school board member Douglas Brown says the district superintendent, George Parker III, has been relieved of his duties.
For me, it was never a question of Dr. Parker's leadership. There's a question of whether or not the staff would support his leadership in carrying us through the new challenges that we face.
Those challenges? Claims from the injured teacher's lawyer saying staff warned administrators three times that the six-year-old boy had a gun and was threatening his classmates, but that the administration did nothing. The teacher now plans to sue the district. Matt Piper, CBS News.
Farm worker Xunli Zhao has been formally charged with seven counts of murder and one count of attempted murder in shootings at two Northern California mushroom farms on Monday. San Mateo County District Attorney Steve Wagstaff declines to discuss the motive.
This investigation is 2 days old. There's an awful lot more to learn.
Tomorrow in Southern California, Vice President Harris will visit the site of the Monterey Park shooting where 11 were killed last Saturday night. In a look at mass casualty attacks between 2016 and 2020, the Secret Service finds nearly three-quarters of assailants used guns. CBS's Nicole Skanger reports red flags could often be found leading up to an attack.
Researchers at the Secret Service determined that nearly two-thirds of the 180 attackers exhibited objectively concerning or in some cases prohibited behaviors, and that's important because it underscores the need for bystander reporting.
A storm system that spawned tornadoes in the Houston, Texas area drops snow from Oklahoma to Michigan, and it's been falling in upstate New York and northern New England. CBS's Janet Shamlin.
More than a foot of heavy snow fell across parts of Arkansas, cutting power, leaving almost 100,000 people in the dark. Heavy snow blanketed Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, and Missouri, where the governor declared a state of emergency.
Please do not crowd and try to get around the snowplows.
In Michigan, the snow led to several fatal accidents around Kalamazoo.
A big win on the slopes, CBS's Steve Futterman reports.
A year after going winless at the Winter Olympics in Beijing, Michaela Schifrin is back on top of the world of women's skiing. Her 83rd win pushed her past fellow American Lindsey Vonn.
It's been years in the making, maybe 27 years in the making.
Schifrin tells CBS News from Italy, where she broke the record.
Definitely a lot of blood, sweat, and tears.
And she and Vonn now top the women's list.
It's pretty amazing that in a sport that's dominated by the European nations, the top two are from the U.S.
This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual.
WAUK 540 AM. New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Mettner with your headlines. Former Badger wide receiver Marcus Randall L. found guilty of two counts of first-degree homicide and other charges on Tuesday. Randall L. convicted of murdering two women he thought were informing police of his drug dealing in 2020. Jurors deliberated just 2 hours before delivering a guilty verdict. Randall L. played for the Badgers from 2004 to 2007. Gas prices are up again, but don't wait to fill up the tank. Experts say prices could keep climbing. Wisconsin's average for regular gas increased almost 50 cents in the last month, now averaging $3.27 a gallon. There are a number of factors, including the Arctic blast over Christmas and sanctions on Russia. Between now and Memorial Day, analysts say prices could hit $4 a gallon again. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does a $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
the devil's advocates.
Mitch McConnell did make a public statement, right? After he voted to acquit.
No, nothing says the president can't be prosecuted.
Set the example for your caucus.
Convince your caucus as to why the man is not fit to serve. How do you not use your leadership to say, you guys, this is crazy. We can't do this, and here is exactly why. Because now of the two major political parties, one of them is under the thumb of a fascist insurrectionist.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
Pat, I feel like all the women we have on our show, like our co-hosts, always get too famous for us. And then
I would just like to think that we are fertile ground from which they can blossom. We are the manure from which they spring.
The manure from which they spring. I was going to say holding fort, but I think your metaphor is way better.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
WAUK 540 AM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUKradio.com. A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 540 AM, always streaming at WAUK.
And we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Obamacare, the dreaded Obamacare. Decade old, just about. Highest year of people signing up since the start. Best year ever. This is what happens when you go out and you say, hey, here it is. Sign up for it. You make it easier to sign up. You encourage people to sign up. Sounds simple, if only. If only. Now, remember, 4 years of the former guy trying to destroy it. 4 years of the former guy. Remember what was the phrase they kept spewing? What was that? Oh, yeah, repeal and replace. They tried, 13,000 times to repeal it? Without a replacement, and here we are. Now, understand, costs are significant. Prices are for these plans, much steeper. Because, again, we've had a Republican Party who every step of the way has tried to destroy this instead of attempting to strengthen it. This is ideological. They said from the beginning they were against it, just like they were against Medicare. Look what they're trying to do there. They've done nothing to help the American working people. This is a working class issue. This is an opportunity to get people the insurance that they need to help take care of their lives. And this is why elections matter. Now, I'm not expecting Republicans to come up with the repeal and replace stuff because they never had a replacement. Well, that's not true. They do have the standard go-to pay or die. That is basically... For your bumper sticker sloganeering, that is their health care plan, pay or die. But good on the Obama folks, good on the Biden folks, good on people saying, look, you know what, we want to make sure that families have some health security. Now, personally, I'm a believer in one giant insurance pool. We shouldn't have to have all of these different systems and all of these different convoluted ways of getting into our pocket. We should have one system. One opportunity to pay the bill. One insurance, because ask anyone who knows anything about insurance, one big pot mitigates risk across a broader number of people, brings down prices for everyone. And if we do it in the public sphere, don't have to pay all that, those high CEO salaries, don't have to pay all that advertising, don't have to pay all that, you know, profit. But I'm not horribly opposed to if we had to go, because, you know, we've been trained like Pavlovian dogs, anything we talk about making public, people get all rabid and angry and worked up. Even though, you know, ask anybody what their thoughts on Social Security and Medicare are. Very happy. My grandmother would have beat you with her cane. if you tried to take Social Security or Medicare from her. So good on that. You know, we're heading towards the, what is it, the 10th anniversary of the Obamacare, and thriving. So good on them. I did want to talk about Gretchen Whitmer, governor of Michigan, did her State of the State spiel and led with bigotry is bad for business. That's a good bumper sticker. Finally, Democrats doing some messaging. Bigotry is bad for business. Where she went after Ohio and Indiana saying, look, reality is you're going to be horrible to people. You're going to take rights away from women. You're going to be inhospitable to other groups of people. You know, we will make them welcome, and we will welcome business. She said, I'll go to any state that restricts people's freedoms to win business and hardworking people from them. I'm looking at you, Ohio and Indiana. And this is one of those things that Republicans have been doing for years. You remember Rick Scott came to Pennsylvania when he was governor of Florida, trying to steal away one of the big employers in the Philadelphia area, the Wawa gas station chains, and, you know, offered all kinds of stuff. And, well, it didn't work, as I remember, because, you know, again, you look at these states and the workers that you're going to have to bring in, the talent you're going to have to recruit. Increasingly, people don't want to go to these red states, these hostile red states, where people's lifestyles are going to be under the microscope and they're trying to legislate who people can be, while all the while saying, we believe in freedom, believe in freedom. Well, our freedom, not yours. Now, good on her. You know, the economic part is a huge part of this. And she said, look, you know, we've got to go after the things that are going to bring people in. She said she wants to repeal their 1931 law banning abortion. She wants to repeal the outdated laws on who you can marry and pass a civil rights act that's going to give people opportunities. Life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. Something I learned as a kid. Maybe you may have heard those words uttered somewhere. I don't know, especially my conservative friends. But the thing is what she's saying is, go look, these states, these radical red states who are doing this really anti-American kind of stuff, they're losing talent. They're losing people. They're going to be losing jobs. And blue states had better pick this up. She said, look, let's go on the offensive. I'll happily go to any state that restricts people's rights and attract business and hardworking talent. You better believe I'm playing for keeps. This, love this woman. Love her. Because this is the messaging. You know, we're going on the offense. No more just absorbing the abuse from conservatives and Republicans. We're going on the offense. We're going to push an agenda that's going to make workers' lives better. And as she points out, look, we're going to make lives better. She talks about policy meaning nothing unless they help people get better lives. And she laid out her lowering Michigan costs plan, which are pretty simple. Helping retirees, ending the retirement tax there on the seniors, expanding the working families tax credit, and establishing pre-K for, you know, families, you know, because that's a huge part. And she talks about her own experience that, you know, she would have never been able to raise her children while continuing her career without affordable pre-K. And that's why she said, I'm proposing pre-K for all. She said it's going to save the average family about 10 grand a year and ensure 110,000 four-year-olds are going to get a head start. This is the stuff that makes people's lives better. This is the stuff that's going to put money in people's pockets. Now, her working family's tax credit, I think she said, and like an extra $3,000 in the pockets of working people. That's huge. And for me, it comes back down to the economics. Comes back down to the things we agree on. Work hard, play by the rules, get ahead, and have policy that moves us in that direction. So I'm thrilled with her speech, you know, to begin with. Then she goes into some of the more, you know, touchy stuff. She goes, look, we got to do something about gun violence. She goes, the time for only thoughts and prayers is over. It's time for common sense action. She says, let's enact universal background checks. Now, here's the thing. This is the weird part of this. This is really popular. you know, like 80% of people in polls say, yeah, duh, we should know who has these weapons of war. We should know if you're, we should know if you're a criminal. We should know if there's something in your past that might make you, go shoot up a shopping mall. People agree. And again, this is this kind of messaging that Democrats have been terrible at. I think she's getting. She points out that, she's all about the roads. In fact, let's fix the damn roads. Yeah, that's what you're supposed to do. But we don't talk about that much anymore, do we? We don't talk about the infrastructure that's being built up and that our government does that. You know, we don't do the messaging. You know, I was having a conversation with a kid today. And, he grew up in rural Texas. And we were talking about how bad Democrats are at messaging and how bad Biden has been at saying, hey, I did this. All of the investments, historic investments in reshoring manufacturing and rebuilding our infrastructure and, beginning to tackle some of the climate issues, all historic stuff. I'm just not seeing the kind of messaging that I would like to see. And, this kid was saying, look, he used to talk to his grandparents who would tell him, now his grandparents, remember, no electricity in the house. His grandparents were saying, look, I remember when they brought the electricity through, Truman's Electrification Act, and the messaging that came out of that, and the same scary words, oh, this is socialism, big government's coming into your home and making you have electricity. And they would run mocking commercials going, yeah, there are people who call this socialism, but I don't care. I got lights. I don't care. My life is getting better. I don't care what you call it. We're moving forward. And he hit an interesting thing. He goes, when you think of rural Texas, you think of, Friday night lights and football. And in fact, there's a whole TV series, movies, all of this stuff. He goes, without Truman, there's none of that. They're sitting in the dark. Because nobody would have invested in those areas. Nobody. The only person that would is government. We the people. So, I'm looking at Whitmer and I'm going, I like the fact that she's taking it right to them. I love the fact that Michigan, the Democrats there are taking it to the Republicans and doing it on how are we going to make people's lives better? I want them here in the coming days to repeal that no rights at work nonsense. I want them to put prevailing wage back in full effect. All of this stuff that built a strong, prosperous working class. Now, will the CEO class be angry? Yeah, but they'll get over it. This is about helping working people for a change. And finally, we're seeing Democrats who are stepping forward. Good, good, good. I want to hear your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. Going to take a quick break. We come back. Got an email that I want to spend a couple of minutes on about messaging. So stick around. Right back after this. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. Fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible two-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. Generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
As I said, Gretchen Whitmer, I think, spot on in the messaging. And Democrats, pay attention. It's you know, my view is it's always been how we make workers' lives better. And good on them. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on one. Alice, how are we doing today?
We're not doing well at all.
Uh-oh.
I have some remarks to make about the health care systems. So about 2 months ago, my husband had a knot on his leg in the groin area. And his doctor had the nurse call over to West Virginia Hospital, which is closer to me than the larger ones, because in our little county, we have basically it used to be a hospital. In fact, I was born there. But then when Reagan came in and started cutting funding and the Republicans took over, it's become like a first aid station. So West Virginia somehow kept losing the request for the CAT scan. So I said to the nurse the other day, I said, you know, we keep calling, you keep calling, we're not getting anywhere. Can you try? And I named, you know, the so-called hospital in our county and see if they do CAT scan. She said, sure. So we went up there today. They did the CAT scan, and my husband said, they want me to go over to the emergency room and get a second opinion. They think I have an aneurysm. I said, oh, my God. So we went in there. There was one person with a kid. Kid's got an earache. So we're the second person sitting there in the emergency room. And then a guy comes in that drops something on his toe. They took the guy with the toe, then the kid with the earache, you know, because you can't go to Med Express if you have an earache, I guess. And there are three walk-in health clinics in our little county. Then a woman comes in. She got a migraine. They take her. So I go up to the receptionist, and I said, look, my husband has possibly an aneurysm. Do you think that he can get seen? Now, this is after an hour of us sitting there.
Yeah, is it possible that they didn't have anyone who could look at it?
How many doctors do you have on call? Well, the long and the short of it is, we were there almost 3 hours. They take my husband back. Doctor says, yep, it's an aneurysm. And there's only one doctor on call.
Wow.
My husband is still sitting up at the little first aid station waiting to be transported to West Virginia to get emergency surgery on his aneurysm.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wish him the best there. This is the problem with what we've done with healthcare. It's terrible.
It's a shame, and I don't think a lot of people, you know, like our little county, has turned red. These people don't even realize what they're doing.
But they love their.
Those are my thoughts on the Republican Party and their desire to kill everybody off. So you have a good evening.
I wish him the best, Alice. Wish you the best there.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. No, it's terrible. I mean, it's what's happened, especially in rural communities. That, you know, I live in a fairly rural community, but you go into some of the other parts of Pennsylvania where there are no hospitals in the county. There's a med center, if that. It's scary stuff. I wanted to get to this email. Ryan sent me an email yesterday that I love talking about this because it's important, and it goes back to the messaging that we were talking about in the earlier segment. He said, you know, he said, hi, Rick, I just tuned in for the first time, and I have to say how relieving it is to hear a progressive voice on radio. I know this is off topic from what you're currently discussing, but hopefully you could address this at some point. Where is progressive radio? He said, I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, and my go-to station for many years was KGO, 810 AM, which was recently shut down. Then I have been searching for rational, intelligent voices on the radio, but have come to learn that the fundamentalist right wing have completely taken over. It's absolutely frightening. Being in radio, do you have any idea why, how this is happening? Yes, very much so. It comes down to money. It's that simple. There's nothing more simple about the basic fact that the right wing invests enormous sums of money in right-wing radio and television. The fact that, you know, Rush Limbaugh was on something like 1,200 radio stations while he was alive, and his replacement is probably on about 800, is telling. And the argument that they make is, well, you know, people want our content. People want to hear our message. People like we're entertained. No, people are force-fed what is given. The right wing took over radio years ago. It was part of the idea back in the 70s when the Powell memo was written to take over media, to take over academics. And they've done a masterful job. Google Powell memo. Lewis Powell was a Supreme Court justice after he wrote this. But he wrote the treatise to save free enterprise. It's a real quick read, but it is the playbook by which the radical right, the corporate right, decided to move. And they spent a lot of money. In fact, you know, the basic premise was at the time, if corporations would spend a statesmanlike sum of 10% of all of their profits on these projects, they could save free enterprise. And what did that mean? What did saving free enterprise mean? It meant crushing workers. It meant crushing labor unions. That was their goal. Their goal was, how do we crush those working people who are living really good, solid middle-class lives, whose wages are going up, whose health care is getting better, whose retirement security is getting better, whose lives are getting better, and they're demanding more? How do we put these people in their place? And what they came up with is, we take over media. Reagan ends the Fairness Doctrine, and the rise of the Limbaughs and the baby Limbaughs begins. And Democrats do nothing really to attempt to fight it. There are a couple of small attempts, i.e. America, the auto workers, you know, put some money into back in 2010 when Air America went out. They put a little bit of money into that, but not like you see on the right, not the massive investments that you see on the right. You know, you look at the National Review. It was always reported that the SCAFE people would give them $1 million a year just to cause trouble. We don't want to hear, here's $1 million. We don't want to hear from you. We just want to hear about you. And they would go and they would just cause trouble because they're pushing an ideology. It's not about selling products. It's not about all of that. It's about pushing the ideology. The product is the hearts and minds of the working class to get them turned away from what made them a powerful entity, strong labor unions, a share of the profits. And that was the payoff. That was the quid pro quo. So when you see all of these stations that are popping up are ideologically right wing, it's by design. You know, a number of years ago when Michael Savage was taken off the air because of his contractual fights, I went to the big talk station in my area and I said, I'll give you $500,000 to put me on in that spot. I can raise that. Put me on in that spot. I was told there isn't enough money to put you on. There's not enough money to break our format. And that was a very telling moment because they, at that moment, you know, they control this powerful medium. Now, there's this story, Ryan, that just came out of Politico yesterday or the day before yesterday that said Fox News is now going to be spending, you know, tens of millions of dollars with this upstart media company. What is it? Americano Media, which is going to target Hispanic voters. The goal being, if what they did to white America in rural counties and rural spaces, they can duplicate that in Hispanic neighborhoods. They can go after, you know, Democratic votes that are up for grabs by doing the same things that they do. Lots of division, especially on race, especially on gender, especially on marriage, because they understand Hispanics are traditional in a lot of ways. And boy, their divisive message will play. Now, again, not going to talk about the economic stuff. Not going to talk about sharing the wealth. No, no. That Horatio Alger, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. They know what they're doing. And the reality is I had a front row seat to the right wing winning the lunchroom war, where good union guys were on Monday, you know, we're solidly in line with, hey, we got to fight for better wages, hours, conditions. By the end of a 2-3 year period, we're then spewing all of the right wing talking points. The right understands the power of this media. The left, well, not so much. I'm hoping someone will finally come around and say, hey, we need to invest in infrastructure and build opportunities for programs like ours to.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Butler to Windlake. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. After the shooting of a teacher allegedly by a six-year-old student in Newport News, Virginia this month, the school board votes to fire Superintendent George Parker III. Board member Douglas Brown.
For me, it was never a question of Dr. Parker's leadership. It was a question of whether or not the staff would support his leadership in carrying us through the new challenges that we face.
The farm worker accused of shooting to death seven co-workers at two mushroom farms is formally charged. San Mateo County DA Steve Wagstaff.
He is not a citizen of this country. There's plenty of motive to run. For that reason, it was, to me, a very straightforward and simple request for no bail.
Tornado cleanup is underway in suburban Houston, Texas. Deer Park Mayor Jerry Mouton.
It's going to be very vital that everyone in the Deer Park area stays off of the road, especially in the areas where we know we've got down power lines.
Rainstorms stretch from the Florida panhandle up to Virginia and portions of the Midwest, along with upstate New York and New England, get snow. CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio.
I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Governor Evers wants $2 billion in new spending for public schools and recruiting new teachers in Wisconsin.
Doing what's best for our kids has always been what's best for our state, and today we can afford to do more.
Evers gave his fifth State of the State speech last night, calling for spending increases to fight mental illness and PFAS contamination. He also wants more investment in Wisconsin's job market. Republicans who control the legislature say most of Evers' proposals won't get passed. TikTok is now banned on all University of Wisconsin system devices. Security experts say the popular social media app is risky for privacy and safety reasons. In sports, the Bucks host Denver tonight. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
What grows in the forest? Our imagination and our family bonds. The forest is closer than you think. Find a forest near you at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
To protect his family from disaster, Steve used his camera phone.
Done.
By taking pictures of his important documents, Steve can always have them stored online. Learn more simple disaster prep tips at ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
It makes me smile, and you have a piano, but if you can play the Peanuts theme song.
Oh,
oh my gosh.
You know he can.
Yes.
On the Devil's Radio.
Yes. Yeah. I love it.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday night, 6 p.m. to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. On an earlier edition, we talked to three women, med students, about whether they're going to stay in Wisconsin to practice medicine.
All this Roe v. Wade stuff, and now OBGYN's hands are so tied. I don't want to go through 12 years of training to have some person that didn't do training tell me how to do my job.
It is not a binary choice. You're for or against abortion. It is a healthcare decision. We all have those stories, and people want to hear them.
Don't miss the real stories here on Up North News.
Self-monitor your blood pressure in four easy-to-remember steps. Self-monitoring is power. Visit managerbp.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Heart Association, and the American Medical Association, in partnership with the Office of Minority Health and Health Resources and Services Administration.
Enticing new source of labor activism for unions that are organizing at Starbucks, Amazon, McDonald's, etc. Why not a Wall Street banker union? Solidarity forever, brothers and sisters.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the fun and entertainment is about to begin. Donald Trump's coming back to Facebook. He's going to be on Twitter. He's going to be on Facebook. Now, I don't really care. I could care less. The fun for me here is, will he abandon the Truth Social? And will my prediction, now remember, I predicted this the day they came out with Truth Social and Devin Nunes resigned from Congress to be the CEO. How long does it take for Devin Nunes to sue Trump because he's going to lose his job because Truth Social is going to go down the tank? There's going to be nothing left. And, you know, Devin Nunes loves to sue. How long is it going to take before Devin and his cow cry? That for me is what the interest. I can't care about Trump or any of the other stuff. That to me is what I'm watching. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the return of the Trump to Twitter and to Facebook, and also, I guess, for the first time now, texting. Wow. I've asked Maya May to come talk with us. She's the co-host of We're Speaking over at Lincoln Project TV, a project of the Lincoln Project, Lincoln Project US, the website. Maya, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, Rick. It's been a while, so I'm glad to be back.
It has. It's great seeing you. So what do you think of the Trump returning to the Twitters and the Facebooks? Did you think he was going to do it?
First of all, we knew he was going to do it when he was allowed to, right? We knew that was coming. And I think part of it is his announcement didn't get the splash that he was hoping it would have. He's running for president. He's expecting everybody to be like, yeah. And he's like, okay, you know what? What's going to make people really mad is me getting back on social media. Like, that's the thing that is going to create the chaos and the noise. And he knows it. The sad thing to me, though, is that Facebook doesn't know it, apparently. Have you read their statement? Because it's insane.
I did. It's one of those things where I'm going, I don't really care. I mean, it's one of these things where, you know, I'm at the point now where social media has turned into such a cesspool, and it's so ridiculous that I try not to spend much time on it. And I don't think any rational person should.
Well, but that's the problem, is it's all the irrational people that are on there, and that's his target market, and he knows it. And so right now we're at the beginning of this next part of his trajectory where he starts to rile up his base. And now that he's going to be doing his own texts, like then that, because I signed up for the text during the election cycle because I'm like, I want to see what his team has him saying. But I'm really paranoid now that he's just going to try to take over his entire marketing arm. And it's just going to be him sending tweets, sending texts. Like it's a little bit bonkers, but I did read the Facebook statement, the Meta statement, and they're basically like, well, it's important in the political discourse in a democracy to make sure that all voices are heard, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And, you know, there's not that imminent harm, and that the measures that they took after January 6th were simply because it was something that was so outlandish and egregious that they had to act. But that was just 2 years ago.
Right.
Go ahead.
But this is where my mind goes. I don't want to take anybody off of this. I want people spewing their nonsense. I want to be able to hear what he's got to say. I'm a believer in more speech is better, and that our speech should be taking. Please, Donald, tell me all of the irrational thoughts that are banging around underneath that orange dome. Tell me how crazy you're going to be so that we can then make the argument to the sane and rational among us that this is not the right guy for this country. By making him a martyr and blocking him, it's to me, it just sends all the wrong messages of what I believe in this country.
I love free speech. I think it's important for us to have it for democracy. However, we're living in a digital age where algorithms tend to toy with that free speech. So it's not necessarily free in the sense that, because it's not like he has his own social network where he can say whatever he wants to say. It's not like he's not out there. It's not like people don't have access to that information. Is the amount of screenshots from Truth Social that have been shared on Twitter.
And I love his truth. I love his truthing. Now, granted, it's all BS and lies under the guise of truth, but at least, you know, I'm getting a sense of, look, you know, the classified documents thing. He didn't take classified documents. He just took empty folders that looked pretty. There wasn't, you know, there wasn't anything in there. That's the latest I love the mental gymnastics that go on between those
Who hasn't repurposed manila folders, though? Come on. Like, half my manila folders, like, they say taxes, then they say, like, you know, car information. So I could actually buy that. Maybe just repurposing the folder.
So he's a hoarder is what you're telling me.
I think that's what he's telling us, is that he's a hoarder and therefore should not be prosecuted because hoarding's not a crime.
Yeah. And the other thing is, I love, you know, they just had, it had nice words on it, like classified or confidential and other words. Yeah. Yeah. Other words that tell you, you don't take this stuff home.
Yeah. But and here's the thing, like, I know I've got stuff in drawers that I don't remember what's in there. So I'm like, as the news has come out about Biden having the documents and Pence having the documents and Trump having the documents, I know everybody at home is going, documents, like, yep. They're not top secret documents, but there may be things that I can't remember what's in a drawer. Like, they have to go through a lot of documents. So I'm like, it's a filing situation. Everybody's got a junk drawer. They should probably check it. Like,
I checked mine. Just in case, because you never know. It could have been laying around somewhere, especially over the 4 years when Trump was in the White House. I do know one person who probably does not have classified documents, and that was Dan Quayle. I mean, Quayle's name came back up. I don't think they gave him any of that stuff. Coloring books, Mr. Potato Head things, sure. No classified documents.
Yeah, things to just keep him occupied and busy. But yeah, I think this is, like, we laugh, and I laugh because I'm a comedian. Like, that's how I get through a lot of this stuff. But at the same time, what I feel like is we're losing the complete and total grip on reality of what seriousness of what, like, just the things that we're even discussing in our political sphere right now. It's kind of scary, yeah, that we're, in a sense, normalizing a president saying that he's going to declassify things with his words. And like, it's completely normal now.
No, and it's scary. And this is where Democrats, again, have failed on a number of levels. I mean, this debt ceiling thing. I mean, well, this past week, we're going to raise the price of everything in the country by 30% by having a federal tax and abolishing the IRS. So screw you, working people. We're going to go after granny, and we want to steal Social Security and destroy Medicare by holding the globe hostage over the debt ceiling. You know, why aren't Democrats taking a better advantage of attacking these people for wanting massive inflation? In fact, you know, right now they're pushing to end Biden, you know, taking some oil out of the strategic reserve to help lower costs on energy. We want higher prices. We want pain and suffering for working people. Why aren't Democrats hammering on that?
Because Democrats somehow think that the best way to move forward is through calm policy suggestions. And unfortunately, we're living in an era of bumper sticker politics. Like, everything's a slogan, and Republicans know it. They know there doesn't have to be. Like, my big issue with the Fair Tax Act is, like, it's never going to pass. It's never going to go anywhere. So it's just a waste of time. And so they know that they can just put out these ideas that their base is going to love. It's going to sound good. Yeah, abolish the IRS. That sounds good on its face, right? But they know they're never going to have to back it up. And the fact that Democrats don't seize on that is part of the reason why I am in deep fear of our democracy, because if there's no better time than now, right? Because we're in a situation where it's like, it feels like very much like a crossroads. Like, if we've got a George Santos in there and he's on committees, we've got a Marjorie Taylor Greene who's being normalized now. She's being cleaned up. You see her on the news and it's like, oh, well, she looks like a respectable lady. If Democrats don't seize the opportunity right now and call this out for what it is, which is the normalization of fascism, the normalization as chaos, as politics, that's it. Like, where do we go from there?
No, it's an excellent point. You know, but you brought up something that I thought was interesting. You said, you know, they're putting out these ideas to make their base happy that are never going to pass. The Tax Act, whatever the scheme that they've come up with, is never going to make it through the Senate. And even if by miracle of miracles it somehow did, Biden was never going to sign it. It's never going anywhere. But it is curious to me that this is what they come out with when we know that a 30% tax on every product, a federal sales tax, would harm the vast majority of working people in this country who don't pay but 15% federal tax, 10, 15, or 47% of us who pay zero because we don't have high enough wages. So you're talking about a 30% cut to your pay on wages that you can't, you don't even have enough to pay federal tax to begin with. Who are they talking to? Who is this for? It's certainly not for me or you or anybody who collects a paycheck.
But they're counting on their disinformation and misinformation machine to make people think that it is for them. And they know they don't have to worry about it ever happening anyway. And like, I lived in a country where there was like a 30% tax. And you know what the rich people did? They just left the country to buy things.
No. And that's what's going to happen. Of course. Of course that will happen. And who gets screwed? The single mother, my mother growing up, me growing up in the projects, we get less food than we even had then. You get less opportunity. It's a horrible idea. Why aren't we seeing ads, billboards? Why aren't we seeing a slew of messaging? Why are we not seeing this?
Yeah, and it's infuriating. And I think, and this is the part, like, not to go back to the Facebook thing, but like, this is the part where it's like, the messaging is so important. And Donald Trump, the GOP Republicans are incredibly good at hammering their messages home because they don't actually mean anything. They're just words. Whereas I think Democrats have a hard time because they want to bullet point out all of the background information, all of the things, because they actually are putting forth policy that can be implemented and can change lives. And so to explain something that's complex that can actually get passed is a lot more difficult than just saying abolish the IRS and then the entire base being, yeah. So I think the task that the Democrats are up for is much more difficult. And so I don't want to like rail on Democrats, but I am kind of like, right now is the time to go for the jugular.
Oh, absolutely. Because you're not getting anything done the next 2 years. Everyone has to know nothing will get accomplished. This is where you go, you make your sales pitch. Government has to figure out how to get back into selling things again. Democrats, look, you know, I just said this a minute ago. Biden has done some historic things. We've got massive investments in infrastructure. We're going to do what Truman did with electricity to the internet because of Joe Biden. We're going to bring good internet to rural communities. Why aren't we selling that in massive ways? I don't know. Bad messaging, bad infrastructure. In fact, I just had a guy who, you know, just started listening to the show send me an email saying, why do progressives, you know, why isn't there any progressive radio? Why are you getting killed in these spaces? And this is part of that. The right has built a massive megaphone where they can spew these bad ideas. And, you know, like any sleight of hand, they show you the good parts.
Yeah. Well, no, and that's, you're 100% right. And I'm out here in LA where we have Prager and Dennis Prager and Prager University and all of their different right wing media shows. And they're slick and they're good and they're aimed at they're aimed at the youth. And so, you know, when they talk about indoctrination, I'm like, I just saw an ad on Fox News for socialismsucks.com, I think it was. It was like children's books to teach how bad socialism is. And I was like, ah, what is happening? And I think honestly, Rick, people are overwhelmed. I think Democrats are overwhelmed with the sheer chaos. It's like, Republicans have a really good understanding of how the different people on their team fit in, right? So you have the George Santoses of the world who are creating all of the distractions and chaos and disarray. And so that all of a sudden everybody's looking at that. Meanwhile, you have like the Heritage Foundation templating all of these fascist bills and getting them sent out like throughout the country while everybody else is talking about George Santos. And I think it's so difficult for Democrats to like stay focused because Republicans have all these crazy big shiny objects that they like to throw in front of every single time it feels like the Democrats fall for it.
No, you're absolutely right. And the thing is, and this is where you've hit it spot on. It's that coordination between, you know, the think tanks, the radio and the TV, the policymakers. It's this whole incestuous pool of messaging that's designed to misinform, disinform, and well, just flat out lie. But like today, the Heritage Foundation, you brought them up, sent out a thing. I can get their pamphlet, their ebook for free on five reasons why CRT is bad, five reasons why it's wrong. And they... Look, they spend a lot of time making up these slick little talking points, and they're masterfully done. They're very short, they're very concise, simplistic to a fault and easily regurgitated by people who want to know things, who believe that they're fighting for their country because they believe those people are coming, Maya. Those people are coming.
Well, and I have to tell you, I was just in Florida, Rick, and I asked my Uber driver, because I lived in Florida for a couple of years, and I said to him, I go, so, I just wanted to know. I was like, ¿Qué tal acá? ¿Qué tal DeSantis? And he said immediately, and in Spanish, the whole conversation was in Spanish, and he said, I'm a capitalist, was his first thing he said. And I was like, well, I think most of us are capitalists, but okay. And he's like, I'm a capitalist. And then he just proceeded to regurgitate talking points about how DeSantis is a good businessman and he's good for business. And I was like, really? Going after Disney because he's upset? Going after the NHL? Intervening in business decisions? Is that what capitalists do? And it was clear that he was getting his information from right-wing media because yep. It was these very simplistic talking points that actually don't pan out if you look at the actual facts. It's wild to me. And if Democrats don't figure out how to come up with simple messaging that can compete with that, like everything doesn't have to be this like, and I think we were spoiled by the Obama era, I think, where he was able to spew all these beautiful things, were full of hope and people were inspired. And he was also able to say things that were complex and that people were able to easily understand and digest. And now you don't have people who have that same kind of panache. And so they're struggling to be able to, it's like, okay, we either got to go with a simple message that everybody can repeat, or we're going to have Obama come back. I don't know.
No, we need a very simple message because, look, I love Joe Biden. I love the policies. I would have loved Obama to go and use the policies that Biden is moving forward. I wanted the infrastructure. I wanted the manufacturing. I wanted all that stuff during the Obama term. But we need somebody a little more articulate than Joe. Joe's slipping a bit. It was never a great orator. But
he gets it done. And that's the thing. Like, Biden gets things done. And I love that because he does it quietly. And I want everybody to take a page from the Biden book where it's like, he's just kind of like, you can't ruffle his feathers. And I love that about him. And I think that's what scares Republicans about Biden so much is that they try to throw things at him. They try to throw him off his gang. And he's just like, yeah, documents. I don't know. Like, it was locked. Like, what? They weren't on the street. Like, everything's just like, so.
And I gave him back. You know, it's not like I fought for him and made up 13,000 reasons why I should have them or some magical, I had a wand and I declassified everything.
Yeah, he's just like, go ahead, try another one.
So last question I've got for you, because, you know, clearly, the Republican clown show is going to take form in the next. The investigations are coming. All of this stuff's coming. What opportunities do Democrats have in the coming weeks and months to do some of this? And do you have any hope that they will?
So this is my thought on this is, when we think about how much energy, like if we just think about the average family, if you're spending time doing X thing, you don't have time to do this other thing. I think it's really important that Democrats point out that while the Republicans are busy going after Hunter Biden, while they're busy having investigations on documents that apparently everybody has anyway, what are they doing for the American family? Like, you know, I look at, like, for example, in the DeSantis situation, nobody's saying, well, he's been governor for 4 years. Is your life better? How is your life better? What are they doing? What are these Republicans doing that are actually making a change? And I don't think nobody can truthfully really answer that question in a concrete way, how their life is better, other than being able to say things on Facebook that they weren't able to say before. So I think it's really important to just ask people, how has your life changed?
There you go.
What have they done?
No, I'm with you, Maya. I appreciate the time. You got to come back again sooner. It's been way too long.
It's been a while. Thank you. I would love to come back.
I appreciate it, Maya May. Thanks so much. Co-host of We're Speaking over at Lincoln Project TV, lincolnproject.us, the website, if you want to take a look at that. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1787. That was the day known as Shays' Rebellion. The United States was a new nation, and the Constitution had not yet been written. The Revolutionary Army had won the war with Britain, but the young nation was mired in debt. During the aftermath of the war, more farmers moved into western Massachusetts. Many of them incurred high levels of debt in setting up their farms. Due to economic hard times, the farmers found it difficult to repay their debts. Local sheriffs began to seize farms and even jailed some farmers. Anger amongst the farmers began to rise. They held meetings to discuss how to respond. Many saw the government's actions as an echo of the very type of tyranny they had stood up against during the Revolutionary War. They petitioned Boston for economic relief, but their requests fell on deaf ears. The farmers began to protest the courts, disrupting the proceedings. For 6 months, the farmers waged organized resistance. One of the men whose farm was threatened for repossession was Daniel Shays. Shays was a former captain in the Continental Army who had fought against the British. He organized a force of 1,000 men. The men marched on the debtors' court in Springfield and the arsenal located there. The governor of Massachusetts called out armed troops in response. These troops were funded by wealthy merchants from the eastern part of the state. And so, on this day, four of Shays' men were killed as the troops attempted to forcibly remove the rebels. By February, the rebellion had been crushed. The rebellion influenced the writing of the U.S. Constitution, as some drafters were convinced that a strong central government was needed to quell further uprisings by the working class. Labor History in Two brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
The reality is, when you look at what's happened in this country around the media space, and we talk about this all the time, the right wing has spent massive amounts of money, you know, putting out these fires. They throw this outrage candy out there to get people all riled up. You know, it's Drag Queen Friday or whatever, and they get people all, you know, all bunched up in the panties, and you know, people, you know, storming the Capitol or storming public, you know, school board meetings because they're coming for the children. But you can't get those people to get out to say, look, you know, we need better wages, hours, conditions for so we can raise our families. Kids need better health, better access to health care. Kids need better access to education. Are there problems with our education system? Yeah, there's a massive amount of inequality. But again, what the right does masterfully is they choose these stories, they choose these moments, and then they hyper magnify them. You know, I've talked to a bunch of teachers over the last year. I said, "Do you have a litter box in your classroom?" "No, but I've been accused." Every one of them have been accused of having a litter box. And universally, what they all say is, "Go look, I'm underpaid enough. I'm overworked enough. I deal enough with society's problems by having to deal with a lot of the breakdown of the family, a breakdown in society. I'm not cleaning a litter box. I'm not even getting a cat's litter box, let alone a child's." And this idea, but you ask any conservative, you ask any Republican voter, you ask any of these people, they believe every classroom now standard operating procedure. Every classroom must have a litter box in the corner, which is insane. But again, what they understand irrational anger. They understand that if they can get working people all riled up and ticked off, they can get them to act against their own best economic interests. So while their wages are stagnant and declining, while their health care is getting worse, while their retirement security has been ripped away from them, while working conditions are getting worse, while society is breaking down and the things that we used to get from our government has been defunded, we don't have a social safety net, that's fine as long as we can go after those people. And that they understand masterfully. And they magnify those fault lines to keep us angry at each other. They keep us in the red hat, blue hat sections. I got my red hat. I bought the flag. Got the T-shirt. Instead of going, hey, you know, put down the red hat or the blue hat and put on a hard hat. Let's build forward. Let's make lives better. Maybe even your own. I just find it really ironic that these red states, and good on Gretchen Whitmer for pointing this out.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.